Tonight, we're in Genesis chapter 42. As we just keep plugging along with Genesis, and as Jacob, between two wives, Rachel and Leah, had 12 sons, these 12 sons have grown up, and Jacob's name would be changed to Israel, but we keep seeing him still named Jacob over and over again. But his name would be Israel, and each of these sons would be one of the 12 tribes of Israel that we know of today. But something happened for all of for Israel to actually grow into a nation, and it wasn't pretty. It was unfortunate. A lot of unfortunate circumstances. One is that Joseph, the second to the youngest son of the first son of Rachel, and he was Jacob's favorite, and so Joseph was given a special coat of many colors, and he was given authority over the rest of Jacob's sons, and Joseph loved to tell his dreams to his brothers, and his brothers despised him, and the dreams, of course, made him more despicable because he kept telling, he says, "Hey, I had a dream that y'all bowed down to me." And that didn't go over well with the brothers. And then he had another dream, says, "Wow, I had a dream that y'all bowed down to me, and mom and dad and everybody just bowed down to me." And his brothers got upset and said, "Well, let's see what'll come of his dreams." And so they were going to kill him. But instead of killing him, they decided to throw him in a well. And they thought, "Well, maybe I don't want him dying there. Let's pull him out of the well and we'll sell them to these Ishmaelite traders who are on their way to Egypt," and sold him as a slave. Joseph was a righteous man. He was 17 at the time he was sold into slavery. And when he, and everywhere Joseph would go from this point over the next, it would be a total of 13 years that he spent in as a slave and as a prisoner. But it kept saying that God was with him everywhere he went. But every time he did the right thing, everything crumbled all around him. Nothing went right with Joseph. But it was right with God. And Joseph, we don't see him complaining. We don't see him, lashing out at God. What he does is just everywhere he was, he served. He just served. And so he was a righteous guy. We also learn that as we go through this story of Joseph, that he is a picture of Jesus Christ. And it's just an amazing picture. But we went through all of that. I had a handout with all of the scriptures that compare him to Jesus. But anyway, so what happened was after Joseph was sold into slavery, he was with Potiphar, and then he was accused of trying to rape Potiphar's wife, but it was actually Potiphar's wife who was trying to chase after Joseph. Joseph did the right thing. He got thrown into prison, and he was left there for 2 years and forgotten about, even though he had told the butler had told him that. He says, "Hey, look, I'll get you out of here." He goes, "Good, thanks," and so the butler gets back to Pharaoh and forgets. And 2 years go by, and finally Pharaoh has a dream. He says, "Man, I got this dream of, seven fat cows and seven skinny cows. Skinny cows are eating fat cows. And I don't know what it means." The butler says, "Hey, I know a guy in prison." And so they got Joseph out of prison and had him interpret the dreams for Pharaoh. And the dreams were interpreted as such, and this is what would go down, is that the seven fat cows represented 7 years of plenty in Egypt, of abundance. And then the skinny cows that ate up the fat cows in the dream, they represented the next 7 years, which would be 7 years of famine. And so Joseph told him, "Now look, this is what we're going to do. This is what you ought to do. You ought to, save some of that grain you're going to be picking up in the 7 years of plenty so that during the famine you'll have plenty to eat." And Pharaoh was very happy with this and says, "You know what? I'm going to make you in charge of all of this." So just overnight, Joseph went from lowly prisoner, falsely accused, all the way to second in charge of all of Egypt. Now, They went through the 7 years of plenty there in Egypt, and Joseph was taking the 20% of all the grain that was coming in and storing it away. And now we approach the years of famine. Since the time that his brothers sold him into slavery, it's been about 21, maybe 22 years. Right around there. And so Joseph is about 37 years old, 38 years old. And there's famine all over the land. Now, what are we, chapter 42? Oh, good. I studied the right chapter. But I just had it turned to the wrong page, and I began to panic a little bit. And so, by the way, the brothers, as they had sold Joseph into slavery, when they went back to their father, they took that coat off of Joseph and they put goat's blood all over it and ripped it up and said, "A wild beast killed your son." And so Jacob was, so they lied to their father. They got rid of their brother, and they said, "Now everything's going to be happy." And they just had a big party. But meanwhile, Jacob was crushed. Well, 21 years have gone by now, and this whole study today begins with one question. What does one do with a guilty conscience? Well, I'll tell you what you do with a guilty conscience. You suffer. Having a guilty conscience is going to get you. It's going to sneak up on you. And that guilty conscience may lie dormant for a while. You did something horrible. And then you seem to have gotten away with it. In fact, nobody caught you. But you just know. You know God saw it. And it's just in there. I think guilty conscience, I can't help but think that this, it's like, it can be like malaria, I learned about malaria because of, you hang out in jungles and they tell you all about malaria and how it works. But malaria is actually a parasite that gets into your liver. And parasite hangs out in your liver and, kind of makes more little parasites in there. And then they take a few laps around your bloodstream. And that's when you have that really high temperature. And then, after taking a few laps around your bloodstream, they make it back into your liver. And you're like, the temperature goes down. And many people believe that they're well now, like, "Oh, I'm over it." But then the fever comes back because they come right back into your bloodstream. With more of the little guys. Now, I think guilt works that way. You feel pretty good sometimes, but then something comes up that reminds you of what you've done. And you start driving around with your face in the rearview mirror. Talk about the rearview mirror. It was before I knew the Lord, okay? But I had accumulated $1,000 worth of parking tickets. It's a long story. Now, and I was driving around with unregistered, the car wasn't registered. I had old tags on there. And it was just how I operated. And every time a cop would get behind me, I would just immediately make a right turn and just kind of pull off somewhere and just let him go. And that's messed up. When you can't even just drive around, every time you see a cop, you think he knows everything about you. And, it happened. I never saw that car again. They pulled me over. Cop pulled me. This is how it happened. I'm driving. Cop back there. And I go, And so I'll get in the other lane. Let him go by. And he got in the other lane behind me. So I got back in this lane. Or maybe I shouldn't have done that. And so he gets back behind me again. And he turns the lights on. Pulls me over. And they impounded my car. They took it away from me, those mean cops. But you know how great, isn't it already, you're already innocent. Your tags are good, your insurance is up, and you're driving the speed limit. But when a cop follows you, don't you feel guilty? All right, you just feel like what am I doing? But can you imagine when you really are guilty, how horrible a feeling that is when the cops follow you? Well, the cops are going to start following Joseph's brothers. And we're going to see how they respond to that. And that's what we're doing. Have I prayed? No. Let's pray. Father, we want to thank you for bringing us here. We thank you for your word, and we thank you for the life lessons, but even just the deeper lessons that work in us for all eternity. And I ask you, Lord, to speak to our hearts, and that we would be upfront with you, that we would come to grips with the fact that you know everything. And also, Lord, that we would learn what it is to trust you when we don't understand what's going on. So may you have your way tonight, Lord. Pray in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. Now, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, let's back up one verse to verse 57 of the last one. 56. The famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine became severe in the land of Egypt. So all countries came to Joseph in Egypt to buy grain, because the famine was severe in all lands. Now, when Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, "Why do you look at one another?" And he said, "Indeed, I have heard that there is grain in Egypt, but so go down to that place and buy for us there, that we may live and not die." And so Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy grain in Egypt. But Jacob did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin with his brothers, for he said, "Lest some calamity befall him." And the sons of Israel went to buy grain among those who journeyed, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. Okay, so we know that the famine was not just in Egypt, it was everywhere. It was in every country. It was just all the surrounding areas. And they were going to die. Famine isn't something that, I don't think we understand that here in the United States, but we have seen video footage of famine in places of Africa, the Sudan and Rwanda and things. That's what famine looks like. And it's not good, and it does kill people, starvation. So it starts here with, why do you look at one another? two thoughts here. The first thought is I think what most of us do when there is a problem. We tend to think it's going to be somebody else's responsibility to get us out of this jam. And so here we are. I always think of it in terms of board meetings. We sit around and say, okay, who's going to do this? Well, somebody will do this. We'll make sure we get this done. And then we don't get it done. No, we've corrected a lot of that, by the way. Don't get scared that we're not getting things done here at church. But what I'm saying, though, is that many times we always think it's somebody else's responsibility. And then we just don't take any personal responsibility to take care of anything. And so he's saying, well, why are you looking at each other? Just, get up and do something. You have a problem, get up and do something and stop looking at one another. Okay, that's probably what is meant here. Or it could mean this. As he says, why do you look at one another? Because, Jacob saw that there was grain in Egypt. And the thought is, and many commentators suggest this, and I like this, that they heard that there was food in Egypt. That Jacob had said this before we see him quoting it there in verse 2. He says, look at all these caravans going on their way to Egypt. So what, we hear there's grain in Egypt. And they began to look at one another. Egypt. I think guilt began You see, because they remember caravans coming through, and they sold him to Ishmaelites who were on their way to Egypt. And Dad says, hey guys, go to Egypt. Get some food. Egypt will have food for us. Do you think maybe there'd be another town that might have some food anywhere else? You know, it would be... And so I think there was... I think that as soon as they heard the word Egypt, it meant we're busted. Egypt meant food to Jacob. It meant we're busted to the sons. Now, if they didn't, they weren't looking at each other that way, which I'm okay with that, we'll get to see that they were riddled with guilt as we get on with this chapter. Okay? So what they did, they went along with those who journeyed, as you see in verse 5. They went with those who journeyed. Can you imagine the guilt they already felt about, like, okay, Egypt, okay, guys, quiet, don't say a word. Okay, you know, all 10 of them walking, you know, we're going to Egypt, going to Egypt, going to Egypt. We're going to travel with you guys on our way to Egypt. And they're just remembering 21 years ago how these groups of people were coming through and Joseph went off with them. And now they're going off with them to the same place they sent their brother. I think every step of the way, it just burned in them. Oh, what a wonderful thing guilt can be. But you notice he kept Benjamin behind. Remember who Benjamin was. Benjamin was Rachel's second son, the only full brother of Joseph. Jacob loved Rachel. She was his first love. And of course, we know that Rachel's dad, Laban, tricked him. And after the big wedding party, he snuck in the wrong daughter. And so now Jacob was stuck with Leah and then worked another 7 years to get Rachel. And Rachel and Leah fought and fought and fought. And Leah kept winning because the best thing for a woman in those days really was to have a baby, and that showed God's favor on them. But Rachel didn't have any babies. And they kept having, Leah kept having babies, and then Rachel said, here, sleep with my maid, and she'll give me babies. Just like Abraham had done with Hagar. And then Leah said, you sleep with my maid so I can get more babies. Until finally, Rachel had a baby, and it was Joseph. And this is why Joseph was Jacob's favorite, because Joseph came from the woman he loved. And then when Benjamin was born, that's when Rachel died. And Benjamin now was all that Jacob had left. And so we understand in that context what verse 4 is. He did not send Joseph's brother Benjamin, lest some calamity befall him. He protected Benjamin, the baby of the family, maybe overprotected him. But he wasn't going to lose him. We'll find that he doesn't really care about the rest of these guys. I mean, they're his sons. But you guys go. Whatever happens, fine, just as long as nothing happens to Benjamin. And so that's where we are. They're on their way, and now Joseph, verse 6, was governor over the land, and it was he who sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brothers came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brothers and recognized them, but he acted as a stranger to them and spoke roughly to them. And then he said to them, where do you come from? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. So Joseph recognized his brothers, but they did not recognize him. So, first of all, you gotta just know that Joseph, as he recognized his brothers, but recognized the backs of their heads because they had their faces on the ground. He had to have a little smirk, at least in his heart. Like, poof, poof, the dream! That 21-year-old dream. I dreamed this would happen. And look at them. This had to be funny. but at the same time, quite emotional. We're going to get to that. Had to be just crazy for him to see them, because I do believe that if Joseph was human at all, that he had given up on what he believed God was going to do. I don't believe he possibly could work out the entire scenario so that this dream would actually happen. And so I believe he was as surprised as anybody to see his brothers, 10 of them, bowing down to him, going, wow, boy, if they knew it was me, but I ain't going to tell them. I'm not going to tell them. Now, remember, he'd been living in Egypt for 21 years, and through those years, he learned the Egyptian language. And he shaved his face. The Egyptian men shaved their faces. Hebrew men didn't do that. And so this man, Joseph, who he was all Egyptian as far as they were concerned. So that's why they didn't recognize him. And also, he's, you know, in his late 30s now. He was a teenager when they gave him the old heave-ho. And as they didn't recognize him, but he recognized them, you know, talk about a picture of the Lord Jesus Christ. And if you can't see it, Stephen in the book of Acts clears it up. In Acts chapter 7, Stephen shares the story of the patriarchs and how these were pictures of Christ. In that, when Joseph saw his brother, when his brothers saw Joseph, they didn't recognize him the first time. But when they came back, it is then that Joseph revealed himself to them. And this is exactly what Jesus is going to do. Because when Jesus came, the Jews didn't recognize him. But they will, because he will reveal himself to the Jews. And as it reads in Zechariah, they will look on him whom they pierced, and they will mourn. And the Lord will save them. And so, just as Jesus is not recognized the first time by the Jews, but will be the second time, Joseph was not recognized by his brothers, but will be the next time they come. This business of him speaking roughly to them, you could make a little bit of a connection here with Jesus, because I think the Jews didn't like the way that Jesus spoke to them when he came. You know, especially Matthew chapter 23. If you ever think that Jesus really spoke flowery words to the Jews, read Matthew 23 and get back to me. Because he just told them what was in their hearts, and it was ugly. He called them whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. He said, the outside of the cup is clean, but inside it's filthy, it's gross. He said, woe to you hypocrites. He called them what they were. He spoke roughly to them. And so here's Joseph saying, okay, I'm not going to let them know who I am, and I'm going to speak roughly to them. Then Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed about them, and said to them, you are... So you remember the dreams. Let's do this. You are spies. You have come to see the nakedness of the land. Now, his accusation isn't... I don't believe Joseph thought that at all, of course, because he knew that they were his brothers, and he knew they just wanted food. But he's calling them spies for reasons that we're going to try to guess a little bit as we go. But to see the nakedness of the land, it's just saying, you've come to see our weak spots. You've come to check out our weakness, so that maybe you could come in and conquer. So we don't want spies in here, you know, looking at the barren land. And so that was the accusation. They said to him, no, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all one man's sons. We are honest men. Your servants are not spies. Now, to say that they were honest, at the moment they were honest. Like, are you spies? No, we're not. I'm being honest. Yes, they were being honest, but what they were dishonest people being honest for the moment. Because back in chapter 37, we know that they told their father that Joseph had been killed. And of course, we're going to see this lie perpetuate over the 21 years. Once you lie, do you realize you have to keep that lie going? And then you have to lie to cover it over and over again. One sin begins another sin. Lies beget lies. But this one lie, they had to keep it going all the time. And so they were dishonest, but regarded being a spy, no, they weren't dishonest at all. But he said to them, no, but you have come to see the nakedness of the land. And they said, your servants are 12 brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And in fact, the youngest is with our father today, and one is no more. Oh, so they're not honest. Now, they might have thought by now that Joseph had been killed. But they didn't know that. And so they're saying, nope, one doesn't exist anymore. But the youngest is with our father. But Joseph said to them, it is as I spoke to you, saying, you're spies. You're spies. You're spies. That's it. You're spies. In this manner you shall be tested. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not leave this place unless your youngest brother comes here. Send one of you and let him bring your brother, and you shall be kept in prison that your words may be tested to see whether there is any truth in you. Or else, by the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. So he put them all together in prison 3 days. So he locked them up. That's awesome. You know, he's trying to figure something out from them. He wants to know more about the family. Because while he saw 10 brothers and they all bowed to him, he didn't see Benjamin. What happened to Benjamin? What happened to his dad? Are they alive? And so he said, you know what? Let's check this out. I want to see. And so I'm going to put you in prison. Now, all this business of calling them spies, all this business of speaking roughly to them, and he's going to be messing with their minds this next couple chapters. He's going to be messing with them. Now, some commentators believe that actually God told Joseph to say these things and treat them this way. Now, one reason they say that is because it all turns out as a picture of, again, them seeing him for the first time but not recognizing him, but then seeing him the second time. It causes them to go back and get Benjamin. It causes them to go back and go through all of this stuff. And so they say, well, God told them to do that. Well, I'm not quite there. I think it was just sinful on Joseph's part. Because anytime you lie, I think it's sin. He knew they weren't spies. He was messing with them. So I'm going to go ahead and say, yeah, Joseph, I think he sinned here. but let me say this. What if it was me? Because the sins that Joseph is committing, the sins he's committing are not big compared to what they had done to him. You know, the law would come out and God would say an eye for an eye. So what should he have done to his brothers? Should have locked him in prison for 13 years. Just said, oh boy. And I wonder how I would have treated him. Here they are. Here you are, you rotten pigs, you know. I'm so happy to see you guys. You know what? I'll have you killed now. You did this to me. You see, that is our nature. And so Joseph showed an amazing amount of restraint to just say, I'm going to put you in prison for 3 days. And that gave them time to think about it, what they wanted to do with themselves, also get them in a twist a little bit more. But this business, though, of him, you know, being this way toward his brothers, let's just, even though it wasn't as bad a sin, it was still sin, but God uses sin. Many of you were here Sunday night. That was awesome last Sunday night. How wonderfully it fits into everything we're going to do here tonight. God uses sin. You know, people have sinned against me, and God used it to his glory. People have sinned against you, and God has used it. Some of you say, oh, they messed up God's plan by their sin. I read a headline. I didn't read the article. I didn't care. Tim Tebow said, some college coach ripped him off of his career. You know, I didn't get to have a good career because this college coach was so-and-so. And I'm thinking, Tim, come on, buddy. You're a brother. You're a brother. You should know better. You should know better that there's not one person in this world who can foil God's plans for you. Nobody's that big. And so, the fact is, people do sin against you. And they're sinning against God when they're sinning against you. But in their sin against you, God's just saying, man, we're going to use it. We're going to make it for good. As we know, at the end of this whole book, I love it. It's like the glorious punchline when Joseph says to his brothers, when they come to him at the end of all of this, after Jacob dies, and they meet with Joseph, and they say, Dad said that after he died, he said not to kill us. Because they were still riddled with guilt. Even though Joseph had told them, I forgive you guys. Here, have a sandwich. I forgive you. Man, you're all forgiven. But they were still tied up in knots. See, Dad said, don't kill us, okay? Promise. And he said, hey, what am I, God? He says, I'm not going to kill you. He said, you know what? What you meant for evil, God meant for good. And that from that day, they were filled with envy. The day that they sought to kill their brother, God was planning their deliverance in it all. Just as when the Jews killed Jesus, God was planning their deliverance in the worst sin possible. So that means that you and I, whatever sin comes against us, no matter what it may be, God's doing something great. And by the way, you've sinned against others. And God will use that too. That doesn't mean go out and sin. That's just plain foolish. Because if you and I choose sin, God will use that sin maybe even to bless others and to work in others' lives. But then we've got to deal with that sin in our own lives. Sin is never an option. Sin is not the answer. As we know that Jonah, who sinned and went the wrong direction, God said, go to Nineveh, and Jonah said, like heck I will. And Jonah turned the other direction and got on a ship and went as far away as from Nineveh as he possibly could think. And so God sent a storm, and everybody on that ship on the way to Tarshish, after Jonah said, you're going to have to throw me in the water because it's my fault that you're having this storm. And they picked him up, they threw him in the water, and the entire ship load of people got saved. They all gave their lives to the God of Jonah because of Jonah's disobedience. So Jonah thinks, I've done a good thing. No, you stink like fish bile now. Your life is in turmoil. Your life is a mess, and you're still a crank, Mr. Jonah. So God used your sinfulness to work on others, but in the meantime, your life gets worse because of your sin. So it's never a good idea, ever, to choose sin. Now, we are not here to excuse Joseph's sin, but I just don't think we're here to criticize Joseph's sin. And the reason I say that is because his brothers really are the ones who are on trial. All right? Because we can so often do that with cops, and it's all over the news. You know, every time some criminal does some horrible things, then, you know, a cop might use some excessive force, and then the cop is blamed. And that drives me crazy. That just drives me crazy. And so, you know, right now, these brothers are the criminals and Joseph is playing the cop. And so, what were his motives in all of this? We can only guess. Maybe he was testing their hearts, looking for a voluntary confession. Or he was scheming and planning a way to see his entire family. You know, we could try to figure this out, but this is what went down. Now, then Joseph said to them the third day, "Do this and live, for I fear God." Do what? Now, the prison sentence, by the way, shows that his brothers, that he is the boss, okay? Joseph's saying, "I'm the boss. You have to go to prison for 3 days." And then he tells them, "I can be trusted, and I'm going to let you live." Why? Because I fear who? God. Elohim. The Almighty. Now, I don't know how many people in Egypt knew of this God. I don't know how many people in Egypt would call him by the name Elohim, because that's a Hebrew word. And so maybe Joseph was giving him a little hint. He says, "If you're honest men, let one of your brothers be confined to your prison house. But you, go and carry grain for the famine of your houses." So, you know, before I said you're all going to stay in prison and send one to go get your brother. Now, tell you what, I'll just keep one of you as a hostage and the rest of you can go back and get your brother. "And bring your youngest brother to me so your words will be verified. And you shall not die." And they did so. But before they did so, we see verse 21. "Then they said to one another, 'We are truly guilty concerning our brother. For we saw the anguish of his soul when he pleaded with us.'" They can't get Joseph out of their head. "And we would not hear. Therefore, this distress has come upon us." We would not hear. That's when they sold him into slavery. Sowing and reaping. Now they're starting to reap what they've sown. It took 21 years. Gosh, the longer it takes to get that harvest, I think sometimes the greater the harvest is. What I mean by that is the harvest of the whirlwind, as we sow to the wind. We planted those seeds and we think, oh good, they died in the ground. But then one day it sprouts up and then you've got to eat the fruit. It's so sad when people do not care what kind of seeds they're planting until they have to eat the fruit. They never spoke like this before. Remember how Joseph pled with us? No. They never brought it up. But now they bring it up. Why? Because their behind is suddenly in a sling. And they're realizing their guilt. Guilt's an amazing thing. Like I said, it's like malaria. It can lie dormant for a time. Guilt, you know, when everything falls apart, either relating to our sin or not relating to our sin, what happens is we start thinking about our sin. You know, when my life is going horribly, I don't know, maybe this is my nature and I got to stop this, but when things are going horribly, I am so aware of what a sinner I am. Just generally speaking. Because it's like, well, do I deserve better than this? And so the boys are here saying, you know, we deserve this. Because he pleaded with us. We are guilty. And now we're being punished because of what we did to our brother, who we don't even know where he is. We don't know if he's dead or if he's a slave somewhere. They still don't know. They're having this conversation in front of their brother. And I'll get to that. And Reuben answered them saying, didn't I speak to you saying, don't sin against the boy? And you wouldn't listen? Therefore, behold, his blood is now required of us. Reuben. Remember back in chapter 37, Reuben said, hey, let's not kill him. Why don't we put him in the hole, put him in the well, and then, you know, we'll just leave him there. And Reuben went back to get him. But Reuben didn't want to do it in front of the rest of them. Reuben lacked the character to do the right thing. But he had some character to say, maybe you shouldn't do this. But now, Reuben's character is showing again as he is blaming the rest of them because he didn't want to do it. See, you guys, I told you. I told you not to do this. But he was as guilty as the rest of them. He's had that guilt by association. He was there. He was in it with them, no matter what he thought about it. And I'll tell you what, he would not hold up in a court of law. You know, three people go in and rob a bank. And on their way in, one guy says, maybe we shouldn't do this. And they say, come on, just do it. Oh, okay, well, maybe I won't fire my gun, you know, whatever he's thinking. But you rob the bank, they go away, they get caught, and there they are before the judge. And he says, Your Honor, I told them not to do it. Okay, I don't think that's going to shorten his sentence. And so Reuben is guilty. And so in verse 23, but they didn't know that Joseph understood them, for he spoke to them through an interpreter. That was my lesson learned over and over again during my tour in South America when I was in the Navy. And, you know, more of my pre-Christ idiocy. We used to just go ahead and say anything. And because they didn't speak English down there, and we could just say anything we wanted. So we did. Said anything we wanted. And that's when, and it happened in Uruguay, where, you know, there's this old guy just standing there at the hotel, just kind of, you know, kind of leaning on the counter. And as we're kind of coming in, you know, I'd greet people. And I greeted him very disrespectfully. No dirty words. No, I wasn't mean. I was very nice. I said, hey, old man. And I just kept going. Well, he was the United States ambassador to Uruguay, and he spoke perfect English. In fact, I would have to sit at a banquet across the table from him. Okay, you know, guys, don't be idiots, okay? Don't do that. But dang it if it didn't happen three times in the whole trip. Because you know what? We're slow learners. All of us are slow learners. But you don't know what's being heard. But there's something else here going on, and that's the fact that as they're having their talk about what they should have done and who's guilty and we shouldn't have, and they didn't and we didn't, and all of this, you know, remember Joseph is a picture of Christ. Jesus hears it all. He hears everything. And I don't say that, you know, for the sake of scaring us. Oh, careful what we're saying. No. But he knows your plight. He knows your problem. He knows that you're guilty. He knows you're hurting over it. And he's got a plan to get rid of that. That's what Joseph here, he's already scheming. He's already thinking, I'm going to have my whole family here and they're going to be eaten like kings and queens. So he's thinking these good thoughts toward them. Meanwhile, they're going, oh no, God's going to kill us. How wonderful to know that you and I serve a God who sent his only son to the cross, and that when we are just overwhelmed with guilt, the Lord's got a plan for that. He says, you know what? I've died for that. Yeah, fact, you deserve to die, but I love you too much for that. I don't want you to die. I want you to be with me forever. And so Jesus went to the cross and suffered the punishment that we deserve for the guilt. And we don't have any more guilt. Do you realize, Christians? We ought not carry guilt around. Oh, have you sinned since becoming a Christian? Oh, yeah. You have. What do you do with that? Well, you know where to go with it. You bring it to the Lord. And it's nailed to the cross. So you and I ought never to be riddled with guilt. And if you are feeling like you are riddled with guilt because there's something going on and you don't want anybody to know, and you're just like, it's a thing and you just... We were watching another holiday classic, and we were watching Home Alone. Okay. There's a scene in there, and I've seen the movie a few times, but I never heard the old man say this in the scene. The little boy runs into a church, and it's there this choir is rehearsing in there. And he comes, he sits down, and then this old man that he's told to be afraid of came and sat down in the church, and he goes, "Oh no, there's that old man." Well, the old man says, "Come here, let's talk." Old man's talking to him, and he says, "What are you doing here?" The little boy says, "What are you doing here?" He says, "Well, this is a good place to come when you're not feeling very good about yourself." And I thought, wow. And it struck me. It struck me in such a way that, do you realize, Christians, that you and I, we don't feel good about ourselves sometimes. Maybe something we've done. Maybe something we haven't done. Maybe we just don't feel good about ourselves. What a great place to go. And that is go to the very presence of God and sit quietly before Him and say, "I'm sorry. I am sorry." And to know that He receives you. He has forgiven you. He's received you. It doesn't matter how many times you've stepped in that hole. Funny thing about that South American trip that I took when I was insulting a lot of people on accident. Through my anxieties and my depression and a gambling addiction, you know, I had lost all the rest of my money again. Well, I think this happened in, no, wherever it was, doesn't matter which country it was. But I remember across from our hotel, there was this big Catholic church. And I just felt like a loser. I mean, because face it, I lost all my money in this, you know, so I was a loser, literally. But my character, everything about me, I was such a loser. And I walked across the street and went into that church and I sat by myself and I prayed. I told God everything. And it's so funny, you know, watching that movie the other night. Was that last night? Whenever it was. And watching that movie, and when he said that, "You don't feel very good about yourself, this is a good place to come." And I was just flashed back to that moment. And you know what? I would turn right around and live my life in filth the very next day. But I know God heard my prayers because 9 years later, He saved me. God hears it. He sees it. And He's got a plan for it. And so there's Joseph listening to all of this, and they don't know it. They don't know it. They think the problem is theirs alone. How wonderful to know that your problem is not yours alone. How wonderful. And he turned himself away from them and wept. Then he returned to them again and talked with them. And he took Simeon from them and bound him before their eyes. He wept. I don't know. You get a lot of good reasons he wept. Like, wow, they remembered me. They remembered me. And they feel bad about what they did to me. Think about that for a second. They laughed when they sold me to this place. But now they actually feel bad. Maybe he's just seeing God working right here, and he still loves them. He's going to go on with his plan. He chooses Simeon. All right, Simeon. Oh, no, you told me your name, right? I was thinking it would be such a mistake, you know. Be like, what a horrible thing to suddenly just call them by their names. Like, No, they told me your names before you came in when you with the receptionist. No, he just says, okay, I'll take you. They bound him, and that was it. And why he chose Simeon, we don't know. You can come up with all kinds of neat reasons that will have no bearing on the story whatsoever. And then Joseph gave a man, now this is, Joseph gave a command to fill their sacks with grain, to restore every man's money to his sack, and to give them provisions for the journey. Thus he did for them. So they loaded their donkeys with the grain and departed from there. But as one of them opened his sack to give his donkey feed at the encampment, he saw his money, and there it was in the mouth of the sack. So he said to his brothers, my money has been restored, and there it is in my sack. Then their hearts failed them, and they were afraid, saying to one another, what is this that God has done to us? Now they're blaming God, and they're blaming God for this thing being against them, for being, this is, like now they're he's going to accuse us of being thieves. How did our money get? But isn't that horrible how that's where the mind goes, as Joseph sought to bless them? I want them to know I'm giving them free food. Put their money back. But you know what? The guilty conscience will always think the worst of some of the best things. You know, how horrible, you know, to know that you have been bad with people. And then suddenly somebody does something nice to you. And what do you, the first thing out of your mouth is, what is that supposed to mean? Maybe somebody's being nice to you. Can't anybody just be nice to you without you thinking there's some kind of weird strings? Somebody's out to get you? I mean, it's messed up, man. You know, every time you get a box from UPS, a package from UPS, you have to shake it and listen to see if it's ticking, you know. Who sent me this? Oh, no. Oh, no. Yeah. Anyway, they're just the guilt will not allow them any joy of anything. And then they went to Jacob, their father, in the land of Canaan. So they made their way back and told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man who is lord of the land spoke roughly to us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we're honest men. We're not spies. Yeah, we are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the youngest is with our father this day in the land of Canaan. That's still lying, even to their father. You know, they got to keep that lie going with Jacob. Then the man, the lord of the country, said to us, by this I will know that you're honest men. Leave one of your brothers here with me. Take food for the famine of your household and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me, so I shall know that you're not spies, but that you are honest men. I will grant your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. And then it happened. Okay, so they told Jacob the story, and then it happened as they emptied their sacks that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. And so, you know, it's funny. The other guys never even looked in their sacks, not until they got home. And so now everybody's sacks got all their money in it. And they're flipping out. And Jacob, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me. Joseph is no more. Simeon is no more. And you want to take Benjamin? All these things are against me. And then we're going to go back and get that in a second. I'm just going to go ahead and read it. No, I'm not going to read it out. Let's stop there. All these things are against me. It's all about me, and it's all against me. Some people believe this about their lives, by the way. They really think that everything is against them. They think that everything is about them. They think that the whole world conspires against them. What a horrible life to live. Starts early, by the way. I don't know that 1 3-year-old that believes that it's okay if something doesn't go their way. I don't know. I haven't met the 3-year-old yet, you know, where you say, no, you put that down, go sit over there. Cool, Mom. All right, I totally get it. No, three-year-olds don't do that. And if you don't break them of that, then they turn into adults who are like that. And we know those adults, don't we? Who really think life is all about them. And so when things go badly, the entire universe has conspired against them. Okay, now I'm done bagging on Jacob for a second, because let me say this. What Jacob has experienced, what he's, remember, he's also in the middle of a famine. They haven't eaten. They're losing weight. And he's lost one son. He's now lost another. And he has the prospect of losing another. This is painful. This isn't something where we can go ahead and bag on Joseph because, you know, I mean, you ever feel like, you know, sometimes your phone's not working, your computer's not working, and so you call AT&T, and if you've ever had to deal with AT&T on the telephone, you know, you think, all these things are against me. You feel horrible. You get mad because you feel like it's all against you. And it's just, you know, or maybe you've been snubbed by a person that you believed was your friend. And so you go, these things are against me. That's not what Jacob is dealing with. Let's say that I lost one of my daughters. Yeah, already. That's messed up. And then it looks like I'm going to lose another daughter. Now, let me ask you this. How could I not internalize this stuff and believe that I'm just cursed? And that there's something bigger out there that is coming against me? How can I not believe that? Just on human terms. So I want to be real right here with Jacob's pain, all right? And maybe cut him a little slack for saying what he said. All these things are against me. I admit that if all of these things were to happen to me, that it would be difficult to see that really the truth of the matter is this, that all these things are for me. All these things are for me. I love Bob Cole. The message he taught Sunday night was a reminder of something that we've been taught a million times, but we still don't believe it. It's our favorite verse in the Bible. You put it on your refrigerator, you put it in your car, slap it on your forehead. You tell other people this all the time. Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for those who, for those who love the Lord are called according to his purpose. For good, sorry. All things work together for good. I ran out of words all of a sudden. All things work together for good for those who love the Lord are called according to his purpose. All things work together for good. All things work together for good. We know that all things work together for good. Even these things. It was that stuff, you know, that it doesn't mean all things feel good. It doesn't mean that all things are enjoyable. It doesn't mean any of that. It means that this piece of the puzzle is important to the entire picture. But this piece in and of itself doesn't look like it even goes. You swear it came out of another box. As Bob gave the illustration of a cake, you take the cake's ingredients, one ingredient at a time, and put it in your mouth. The baking soda is not going to taste like a cake. But all together, it turns into the most wonderful thing, especially if it's German chocolate. It is the it's that same stuff that I work in arranging music. And even just for the sake of my own entertainment, I love bringing people into the studio and having them listen to stuff, and then me just solo out one element so that they can hear one thing. And it sounds horrible. Each piece by itself sounds horrible. But when you put them all together, you can make the most beautiful music. And there are parts of your life that are going by right now that are horrible, painful. But God sees the end result. You know, just as the artist sees the end result. I see the end result of musical compositions way before they get on paper or are recorded. They're in there. I see it, and so I'm piecing it together one at a time. And I've had people sitting over my shoulder said, "Oh, can you not put that there?" But I know it's in there, and it's good. God is a much better artist than I am. He put it in there, and it's good. It looks like it doesn't belong at all. If Jacob had only believed Romans 8:28, of course Romans 8:28 didn't exist yet as far as in writing, but it's always been true. But if he believed it, he could rest. And he didn't know that the very things that he swore were against him were the very things that were going to bring him back to his son. Isn't that amazing? You swear this was against you. But it brought you life. It would save his whole family. Do you realize, go back just to the famine. Here they are, they're in Canaan. They didn't know a famine was coming. And all of a sudden, no rain, no crops, no food. But the famine drove his sons to Egypt, and it is there that they will be saved. But not before all this mess with the officials of Egypt. I mean, it's going to get uglier. Because I know you're saying, oh, good, so God's working it all for good. This bad part, it'll get, okay, the next piece of this puzzle, it's going to be a better piece. It's going to smell good and taste good. It's going to be beautiful. Maybe not. Maybe you get 20 pieces in a row that do not agree with you. You don't know when it's all going to be done. But I will tell you this, I think it would blow our minds if we really knew what God was up to. With what's going on in our lives right now. It'd blow your mind. Who's able to do exceedingly abundantly above and beyond what we could imagine. That's God. And so let's finish this up. Then Reuben spoke to his father saying, "Kill my two sons if I don't bring him back to you. Put him in my hands, and I will bring him back to you." But he said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he is left alone. If any calamity should befall him along the way in which you go, then you would bring down my gray hair with sorrow to the grave." So, no, you're not taking Benjamin. You're not taking Benjamin. Reuben's offer was kind of funny. "Hey, Dad, I'll let you kill your grandkids." Would you? I mean, I don't know. I just don't think that was a great offer. I don't think it made Jacob go, "Well, wait a minute. Now you do bring up that was just weird, Reuben." But Jacob had this grip on Benjamin again because it was Rachel's, and he believed that Joseph had died. These are his favorite sons, as you can tell by this. He doesn't really say much about Simeon. "Oh well, Simeon's gone. Whatever." But Jacob has nothing to lose by sending Benjamin. Let me tell you this. There's a famine. They're going to die. If they don't get food, they're going to die. Now, right now, they have food because they just brought back from Egypt. But they're going to run out of that. Once they run out of that, they're going to starve and die. So, sending Benjamin there's a chance that they could have their lives saved. But by not saving Benjamin, they're all going to die. That was the 2 Kings chapter 7. The Syrians were in Samaria and laying siege. And everybody was starving. People were resorting to cannibalism. And there were two lepers who were outside of the camp because lepers cannot be with God's people. And so all these lepers are out there and they're just sitting there together. They're starving too. They're going, you know what? Let's go to the Syrians and see if they got any food. Well, they're going to kill us. We're going to die anyway. I mean, the worst thing that could happen is they'll kill us. But if we don't go, we're going to die. Let's go. You never know if there might be some food. And so these guys, well, you know, nothing to lose. Hey, listen, when you have nothing to lose, then what the heck? What the heck? And so they do it. They go into the Syrian camp. But then, you know, God caused the Syrians to hear this noise of rattling chariots. And the Syrians got scared and they ran. And they just ran for their lives. And so the two lepers just went through the camp to go, and where is everybody? Said, I don't know, but look, a sandwich, you know, look at this. Look, they took the gold, they took the clothing, they took everything. They're dragging everything, bags of stuff and boxes of stuff. They bring a moving truck, they bring all that stuff over. It's beautiful. Nothing to lose. When you got nothing to lose, that can be a great place to be. But here Jacob allows his emotions to make the decisions, of course, because he's still thinking about his son. He still can't think, you know, he's lost Joseph, and he cannot think about losing Benjamin at all. He wasn't thinking ahead whatsoever. And you think, well, where was God in this? Was Jacob thinking at all, like, God, what do you think about this? I don't think Jacob was consulting the Lord at all. He was just consulting his emotions. And that's how we get into trouble we get in. We consult with our emotions rather than consulting with the Lord. Because God may not agree with your emotions right now. The brothers believed that God was giving them their just deserts. But we know that God was leading them all to Egypt with all of this to save them, to bless them. God had a plan and nobody knew it and they were kicking against it. See, Jacob would have none of God's plan right now. I will have none of this. I'm telling you something. It goes back to the lesson we learned in chapter 16 or 17. 16, 17, whatever there. After Abraham had impregnated Hagar, came up with Ishmael. It's the old lesson of the time when I was, you know, 5 years old in the theater with my mother, watching, you know, movie, and I had my Red Hots, and I was, you know, a box of Red Hots? Nothing like a box of Red Hots in the theater. Man, they get stuck in your teeth. And it's just, and I just, you know, and so we're watching, and I, began to annoy my mother. And she says, here, give me that. And she took the Red Hots, and she, the little popcorn holder thing that we had finished our popcorn, she said, here, pour them in here. We poured them in there. There was one bit. And that, okay, and now that was it. We're not going to hear that noise anymore. People can enjoy the movie. And so I think, well, Mom's great. She's got a plan. So I just reached in there and get my Red Hots. No more noise. I'm good with that. Until a hole broke loose in the bottom and the Red Hots began to pour out onto the sticky theater floor. And it wasn't the noise of the Red Hots hitting the floor, but it was the noise of my shrill cry. You know, of course, you know, all the cars pulling over to the right, the whole thing. It was loud. I think of mothers, you poor things, you know. And I stuck my hand, I thrust my hand up in that hole. And they were just trickling out one at a time now. Clink, clink, clink. And I got my hand in that hole. And she kept saying, get your hand out of there. Get your hand out of there. Get your hand out of there. Get your, no. Because I knew if I get my hand out of there, I'm going to lose all the Red Hots. Get your hand out of there. Get your hand out. Get your hand out of there. Get your hand out of there. Now, if finally, she yanked my hand out of there. And of course, I was right. Some more red hots fell on the floor. But then she took that thing and she just tipped it, saving the rest of the red hots. I felt it was very important for me to have my hand in there. Because I put my hand in there, everything's going to be fine, even though I keep losing red hots. You tell me to take my hand out of there, I don't think I can do that. Because you and I, we got to have our hand in there, don't we? God says, get your hand out of there. We say, if I take my hand out, I'll lose everything. We think we're the ones holding everything together. Why do we think we're the ones holding everything together? What's wrong with us? Now, let me tell you something about Jacob. To Jacob, this was much more than precious candy dropping to the floor. These were his sons dropping to the floor. He was losing son after son. Face it, sometimes it's hard to trust God. It's hard to trust God sometimes. It's hard to believe Him at His word and walk obediently to that. Because, no, we got to do it our way. I got to put my hand in there because it doesn't make sense. What you're telling me. It's hard to understand God. It's like, what? And you know what? You and I, boy, we can quote Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 till the cows come home, can't we? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He will direct your paths. We say it to our friends. You've said it to your friends. They say it to you, and you get mad at them. Because you don't understand this. You don't understand. I can't trust God with this one. I have to do it my way. Because if I do it His way, I might lose something. If I do it my way, then I won't lose this. You're going to lose so much more doing it your way. You can scratch the current itch doing it your way. But you're going to lose so much more. Here's the good news, gang. God is patient with us. He is patient with us. He knows who He's dealing with. And He loves us. And He's going to get us there. He's going to get Jacob there. Yeah, Jacob takes the scenic route. Jacob's sons take the scenic route. And you and I are so good at the scenic route. But every once in a while we start to think, well, maybe God's right. And then we take that direct route. And it's a wonderful place to be. I'll tell you what, you're having trouble trusting God right now? Psst. God knows that. He's not stumbled by it. He's not flipping out. He's not biting his nails over this. He knows you. And He's going to get you there. He's going to get you there. Father, thank You for Your word. And I thank You that though we are so hard to work with, You are so faithful to work with us. You are patient. You are committed to us. You are amazing. And we ask You to forgive us for sticking our hand in there. We ask You, Lord, to change our minds, to change our hearts, to make the adjustments that need to be made, that we would believe You to our own hurt. That You would be glorified and that You would just be pouring more of that glory into us for Your perfect will, for Your good, and for our good. We praise You. We thank You for all the great plans You have for Your people. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.